You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
At 6:15, glad to be with you. In for Tommy Tucker, another day of extreme heat with watches and warnings from the Gulf Coast almost to Canada and from the central U.S. to the East Coast as crazy heat will once again have much of the nation in its grip. And we're seeing many, many people end up in the emergency room with heat-related illnesses. Please take it seriously, folks. Heat-related deaths have been skyrocketing. So I know you hear it over and over again, but so many people say it feels hotter than it's ever felt before. And we were 1 degree away from a record yesterday, and that heat index got up to 115, and that is dangerous. President Trump is on a European trip. Today he'll be dedicating a golf course in his mother's memory in the UK. Yesterday he met with the British Prime Minister. He met with leaders of the European Union. He's been negotiating trade deals with the EU. And I was curious to find out, we've heard so much about how Canadians are not happy with the United States and not happy with President Trump. How do the British feel? How do the Europeans feel about America these days? So Thomas Oatley, he's the chair of international relations at Tulane University, was nice enough to join us. Professor Oatley, thank you for being here on WWL.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
So how does Europe feel about the United States these days, and particularly the British? How are they feeling about America?
I think the best word to characterize the feeling is ambivalent. I think that Europe in general, and the UK in particular, especially post-Brexit, remain very dependent on the US, especially for security, military security in particular. And in this kind of world in which Russia has shown itself willing to use military force on the continent, Europe's need for the American security umbrella is stronger than ever, perhaps, at least stronger than it has been since 1990. And the Trump administration seems reluctant to play America's traditional role, traditional post-war role. And I think that makes Europe very insecure and uncertain about how to manage and deal with Trump.
Did you see any of the interactions between the president and the prime minister or the president and the leader of the EU in their news conferences? There did seem to be a little tension, although everyone was forcing a smile. At least that's the way I perceived it. What did you see?
You know, I think that's right. I think that I did not get a chance to see his meeting with the UK Prime Minister. I did pay quite a bit of attention to the meeting with President of the EU Commission. And my sense there was that the EU in general is very, very much trying to make the best of a bad situation. The trade deal they made is not the trade deal they wished to make, but I think it's their determination that it's the best they could get. Without risking a big trade war with repercussions that for this administration would be difficult to anticipate. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of tension and uncertainty about Trump as president and what he portends for the future of U.S.-European, U.S.-British relationships.
Yeah, and I really got that same kind of feeling yesterday during the news conference with the British Prime Minister, that it was like everyone was there because they had to be there. You know, you ever go to like some formal function that you don't really want to go to, but you go anyway, so you put on a smile, and everyone can kind of tell that you don't really feel comfortable there. And that's the way I kind of perceived it. But it seems like everyone at least is playing nice and getting along at this point.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that everyone is a bit unhappy to be in this relationship. But this is the relationship that structurally everyone finds themselves within and are unable to easily afford to step out of. And so I do think that trying to make the best of a bad situation is perhaps the best way to characterize the current state of the world. I think that showed up this past weekend, yesterday, and Sunday in particular.
Yeah, and they absolutely need us for not only their military security, but also for their economic security. The U.S., the biggest trade partner. So, yeah, they don't love the deal, but they love the fact that it's not worse, and they see what's happening to other countries who don't play nice with President Trump and what kind of trade deals they end up with or not end up with at all. So, all right, when we come back, I want to ask Professor Oatley about the general relationship between the U.S. and the U.K. You know, I find it very interesting that in other parts of the world, people never forget how much they hate other countries they've been at war with, and some have been at war for literally thousands of years. It wasn't that long ago historically that the U.S. declared its independence from the British, but now it's like, all right, they forgave that and we're best friends again. So we'll talk about that after we check on WWL traffic. We're talking with Tulane Professor Thomas Oatley about the president's current trip to Europe, which he's mixing some personal business with international relations and the business of the United States, and talking about how we get along with Europe these days. I find it fascinating, Professor, that you look back at world history and you see like the Middle East, where countries have hated each other for literally thousands and thousands of years. They may change the name of the countries, borders may shift around, but the people there still vehemently hate each other. China and Vietnam have hated each other going back before the Common Era, before Christ. Greece and Italy, India and Pakistan, these are just hatred that is deep-rooted and taught from one generation to the next, and they never let go of it. America will be 250 years old next year, and the British and the Americans are like best friends now. The Second World War ended, what, just 70-some-odd years ago, and Germany is one of America's top allies. Why is it that America and its enemies quickly get over it and become friends, while that doesn't seem to happen in many other global spots?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, isn't it? And I think the tradition on the U.S. side is long. Goes back all the way to the beginning. I think Washington's farewell address, George Washington, that is, as he left the White House, wrote that in our foreign policy, we should have neither permanent friends nor permanent enemies. And I think that is a principle that has shaped our foreign policy ever since. And in the particular case of the British, I think there's a strong cultural affinity. We're both large English-speaking powers. We both have traditions of essentially trying to remake the world in our vision. And to some extent, that makes us adversaries, but also unites us in a common purpose historically. We're also kind of ideologically similar. Both believe strongly in markets and principles of liberal democracy, individualism. And I think at the end of the day, those cultural and ideological commonalities override the day-to-day differences that might occur in any relationship and contribute to creating this very strong bond that has held us together over the past 150 years or so. That would be my take. And I think Germany is a little different because I think there it's more a marriage of convenience, where the recognition of Germany's importance to European security has been a critical factor in the reconstruction of our relationship with them post-World War II.
Yeah, and maybe more interestingly, that these countries don't hate America the way other countries hate those that have defeated them in war or seen similar kind of conflicts. I mean, we essentially, the United States, declared independence from the British and took a very valuable colonial setup away from the United Kingdom. And the Germans, twice, the United States was the key factor in defeating them in war, in world wars. But yet they somehow find a way, maybe out of necessity, because if you're not friends with the largest world power, the economic engine for the globe in America, then your nation suffers. But on many levels, I'm kind of impressed by the fact that both sides have found ways to get along.
Yeah, no, I think that is a very impressive achievement. And from an American perspective, or maybe better, from a European perspective, I think a European and an American hegemony has been more helpful than kind of a traditional imperial model, like the Soviets' approach to Eastern and Central Europe after World War II was very authoritarian and oppressive, whereas the American approach to Europe was much more encouraging of reconstruction and liberty, I guess, for lack of a better word. And so those kinds of policies, I think, have gone a long way to helping rebuild relationships in this post-war era.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and much of Asia could give up the hate the way that the Western world has, and maybe the world would be a far less violent and hate-filled place. Thank you, Professor. I appreciate you joining us here on WWL.
Thank you very much.
And Ian Ozan tells me you're a trivia star, so good to know that. Thank you, Professor. I'm Dave Cohen. Ian Ozan's up next with the news, and then we're talking about what is going on in real estate. More and more home deals are falling apart after both sides seem to agree that they want to sell and or buy a house. We'll find out why coming up. Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker at 6:45 on your Tuesday morning. A new national report finds that in June, some 15% of home sales fell apart, which is the highest share in 7 years. This is after both sides seemed to agree that they wanted to do a sale and a purchase. They're saying that people are not being able to agree on the finer details of the terms when it gets down to negotiations and something derails it. Delisting surged 47% year over year, with buyers stretched thin, pushing back over costs like repairs, sellers, many sitting on low mortgage rates, and big equity not budging. I want to find out, is this something we're seeing locally as well, where the negotiations are more difficult, perhaps, than they've been in a long time? Arthur Sterbko is a local real estate expert and analyst and joins us. Morning, Arthur.
Good morning.
Are you finding this locally, that the negotiation process is getting more adversarial, perhaps, than it was in the past? And like we're seeing across the country, kind of the highest rate in nearly a decade of deals falling apart?
Yeah, it's we've always had about a 5 to 10% fall through rate just because of the buyer found something that he didn't like with the home, or the seller wasn't willing to repair it, or they couldn't negotiate a final resolution to the problem. But it's certainly increased now. And of course, the reason is because people just don't have the discretionary income on the seller side or the buyer side to make those discovered repairs. So where normally someone might have some extra money that in reserves that they could use in case there was a minor problem with the roof, some shingles need to be replaced, or some other cosmetic thing that the buyer found objectionable, they wanted the seller to do it. The seller said, hey, I'm strapped. Inflation's got me to the wall. I just don't have it. Added to that, we've got a little bigger problem than the rest of the country because we've also got the insurance problems in our part of the country. So those factors have increased our fall-through rate, but not to the 15% level that they're reporting in that particular article. We're probably around 8 to 12%. Depending now, in the lower price ranges, yeah, you can certainly get into that 15% range, because many times the lower price range homes in some areas, maybe they just haven't been maintained as much. And home inspections now are almost a requirement when buying a home in today's world. just for litigation and just for safety purposes a lot of times. So
yeah, I thought it was kind of crazy in that pandemic era when people were buying homes sight unseen and waiving inspections, not even knowing what was wrong with the house because the market was so competitive. That was kind of wild. I have been blessed to have been involved in the sale or purchase of 5 homes now. And it seems to me part of the game is, and I use the word game loosely because I know there's serious real money involved here for everybody, but part of the process is maybe a better word, that the buyer and the seller know that after the inspection, the buyer is going to come back asking for the seller to either give them some money or repair something. And because never is a home inspector going to come back and say, everything's perfect, there's nothing to be repaired, because then it's like they're not doing their job. So I'm kind of surprised by this because I thought that was just part of the negotiation process and the seller should be expected to have to give something to the buyer when they find something in the inspection.
Well, that can be true, and of course kind of goes both ways. Sometimes the seller says, look, I've priced it at a price. I know it needs some repairs, and I'm selling it as is, where is. And sometimes the property does need very obvious repairs or renovations. And that's why it's being sold in that condition. It's got a 25-year-old roof, and you can see it needs to be replaced. I don't have the money to replace it, so I'm selling it just the way that it is. And if your lender wants the roof repaired, Mr. Buyer, you do it. But I'm selling it to you, adjusting the sales price to cover it. So those negotiations, many times with a realtor involved, are covered when they put the property on the market. They've discounted the property to cover those repairs. It's the unknown, the unseen repairs, most times unknown by the seller, that's disturbing the seller. Wait a minute, I've been here all these years. I didn't know that we had aluminum wiring in the house. Nothing's burned down while I've been down here. What's the problem with it? And then you've got an education problem to the seller because now you understand that now that that's a known defect, no one's going to buy that thing until it's repaired. That's end of story. So let's move on, unless you seriously discount the home. So that discovery mode in the seller's mind is many times what causes them to reevaluate negotiating.
Yeah,
but if he doesn't have the money to do it, you know, we've got
a problem. So that's a question of strategy. Do you price the home low enough to attract enough buyers that you can get someone who would be willing to make those repairs themselves? Or do you price it at a point where you know you're going to have to come down to cover some repairs? That's a discussion for you and your realtor. When we come back, and by the way, under slab plumbing has been my nemesis when we get to that inspection process. So there is that. When we come back, I want to talk about other factors. How long are houses staying on the market now in Greater New Orleans? And how is the insurance, record high, highest in the nation insurance, impacting the real estate market here? If you have a question for Arthur Sturbco, text me or call me now on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870 while we look at the state of the local real estate market here in Southeast Louisiana. After this check on WWL Traffic. With local real estate expert Arthur Sturbco. Arthur, how long are homes staying on the market around here these days?
Well, right now we're probably around 62 days on the market from the time the property goes on the market. But let me be clear, that's the homes that sell. So there are a lot of homes that go on the market. They're still on the market. They've been on the market for a year. But of the homes that sell, that are priced right, that their buyers in the market looking for them, average 62 days. So if you price it right, put it on the market, there are buyers in the market. But contrast that, Dave. You go back to 2021 when the interest rates were so low, it wasn't even 20 days. It was, you know, with 10, 12 offers on a house the day it went up for sale. So those interest rates of 2.75% versus 6.75% today have had just a chilling effect on the rate of home sales.
Yeah, a lot easier when you're playing with house money, and now it's money people are having to spend if they want to get in the game.
And the insurance wasn't anywhere near what it was, you know, back in 2021. So there was a huge avalanche of positive factors in home sales back then. Just in terms of the number of sales that took place back then was remarkable. In the month of June of 2021, there were almost 2,000 home sales in that 1 month in Greater New Orleans, 2,000. And if you say, well, how many this past June? 1,200. 2,000 wow. down to 1,200. So you can see the dramatic difference. Significant.
Yeah, and you kind of led me into my next question about how are the highest in the nation insurance rates impacting sales activity? And clearly, when you incorporate the interest rates, which are dramatically higher now, and the insurance costs, which are dramatically higher, we end up with fewer sales because fewer people can afford to buy a house.
That's correct. But I will say this, on the positive side, there's been a pretty dramatic uptick in home sales. Really, since January, it's been fairly dramatic.
To what do you credit that?
I just think there's just more consumer confidence. There's this feeling that interest rates are going to come down. The inflation rate settled down, actually fell down a bit. So that fear that, oh my gosh, you know, my grocery bill is, you know, $500 when I go to the store now. Next month it's going to be $800 at this current rate of inflation. We better stand still and not think about selling. Well, it didn't just stay at 500, it went down to about 480, 470. So that's in many of the grocery commodities. So people are feeling like we hit the zenith of inflation, and now it's something we can live with. And it's quite possible we're seeing some increase in economic growth as well. So the market has clearly turned a page, and now we need these interest rates to come down to get things more settled out, not just in the country, but certainly here.
Maybe, just maybe, now that we're getting the uncertainty out of the whole tariff conversation and we've got Japan and the EU finally under trade deals with the United States, maybe we'll see those interest rates start to come down now that there's some clarity about what's going to be happening with tariffs, if we can get a couple of those other major trade deals out of the way. I also mentioned earlier that we're seeing a surge in delistings across the country where sellers are just throwing their hands up and going, forget it. I'm not going to get what I want, so I'm not going to sell. Are you seeing a surge of that here in Greater New Orleans as well?
Not really. Not like I'm seeing in other parts of the country where the prices are just so high. Especially in California, in some areas of the Northeast, that is a common thread, that there's no buyers that feel comfortable buying, either because of economics or whatever. But in any market, David, it always comes down to two words: consumer confidence. Do they feel good about their station in life, where they are, about their location? Can I move up? Can I afford to move up? If I can't, gosh, I'll take this house off the market and just stay where I am. Some sellers were just used to incredible appreciation in those markets and expecting that, you know, the prices are going to be where they were a few years ago. Well, in some of those high-priced markets, the prices in the upper price range have fallen dramatically. So the house isn't worth, you know, $9 million anymore. It's worth $7 million.
So you're going to take a loss on the sale, and that's what nobody wanted to do. Yeah, Arthur, right, we've run out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. I know we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for sharing the local real estate picture with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about LSU reporting to football camp today here on WWL. I've been blessed with a great agent. That's very important, too. Looks like a motive is starting to develop in that deadly shooting in New York. The mayor says that the gunman who killed four before taking his own life was targeting the NFL headquarters in Manhattan, but apparently took the wrong elevator and never made it to the NFL headquarters and ended up killing himself before he could find his way there. We'll have more coming up for you in the news at the bottom of the hour here on WWL. LSU players report to football camp today, and we're barely a month away from the opener for your LSU Tigers. WWL's Jeff Palermo, who writes all of our LSU news at WWL.com, joins us now on the live line. Morning, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing, Dave?
Football is in the air. We're getting closer and closer to not having to watch cornhole and other sporty sports on ESPN on weekends anymore. We're getting some real sports on the horizon, and glad to see that the Tigers are reporting to camp. It seems, depending on who you ask, though, the level of optimism varies. The writers at SEC Media Days picked the Tigers to finish fourth in the SEC. Others are picking them to compete for a national championship. What should we believe here, and what are your expectations?
Well, I think I look at this, and I got a story coming up here very soon here on WWL.com, Dave, and I wrapped it up at the end, I guess, to get to jump all the way to the bottom. Is I almost look at this season for LSU football very much like what we just had with LSU baseball. We went into LSU baseball recognizing that the team, especially considering the work they did in the transfer portal and the number of players that they signed, that the depth was there. I mean, Brian Kelly has made it clear that this is the best roster he's had since he's arrived at LSU. And you can make the argument that Jay Johnson going into the season, even though he had won a national championship in 2023, that the roster from top to bottom was better than that 2023 team. What you just didn't know about LSU baseball this past year were, yeah, you had a lot of good players, but you needed some guys to have some great years. And that's exactly what happened. You know, with the likes of Cade Anderson and Ethan Frye and Anthony Ianson and, you know, Derek Curio. There was a lot of guys that had great seasons. When you look at the All-SEC preseason team, there's only one player that's a first-team selection, and that's Whit Weeks. But you can make the argument, and I think Brian Kelly will tell you, that there's a lot of guys that are poised to have great seasons for them this year. Guys like, obviously, Garrett Nussmeier.
Who needs to have a great season. Yeah.
Yes, Cade Durham, the sophomore running back. Guys on the defensive line like a Dominic McKinley, Harold Perkins, you know, could Jarden Gilbert have a really good season? So if some of these guys that certainly have talent really have breakout seasons and have, you know, big seasons, yeah, LSU is a national title contender. But, you know, if these guys, if it's just, you know, just, I don't want to say average seasons, but if they don't have those kind of breakout seasons or injuries occur again to Chris Hilton and, then they're a team that's, you know, fighting to win 9 games this season.
And I guess if you look at the history, they've lost every season opener since the coaching change. And if they lose this season opener, you wonder, all right, where does this season go? Although, looks like things get easier from the first week on out. This may be their toughest game of the season against Clemson to start the 2025 campaign.
And what is, I think, a little more interesting about this season opener is how much they are putting into it with the Clemson paw prints and Clemson, you know, posted all over the locker rooms and the team room and the weight room and showing highlights of Clemson game, all going 1-0. You know, that's the mantra of the season. They're putting so much emphasis on it, and you have to wonder if they end up losing at Clemson, just, you know, how this team is able to mentally rebound from that. They're going to have to rebound quick. Yeah, the next game is, you know, a winnable game, but then you have Florida looming on the schedule, and they're pretty talented as well. So they're putting so much into it as far as trying to win the season opener. It will be a letdown if they, again, drop their week one game.
Yeah, when you put that much emphasis on something, if it doesn't happen, that's the risk that it hurts you more than if you had lost if you hadn't put so much emphasis on it. Where are the Tigers strongest and weakest? We'll ask Jeff Palermo to run that down for us after we check on WWL traffic. Talking with Jeff Palermo about expectations for the LSU football team as players report to camp today. Jeff, the Heisman odds have Arch Manning most likely to win, followed by Garrett Nussmeier and Clemson's Cade Kubnick. So two of the top three candidates for the Heisman squaring off against each other in this first game for the Tigers. That should be exciting.
No, that's just another huge storyline for this game, you know, and then you got the whole, you know, who has the real Death Valley debate going on and, you know, two teams that, you know, Clemson got into the college football playoff last year, and, you know, LSU's trying to punch their way in there, and you got two veteran coaches and Dabo Sweeney and Brian Kelly. It really is a fantastic season opener, and it there's a lot to chew on when you look ahead to that game and the battle between the two quarterbacks. One of them is going to take a step forward towards putting themselves in that Heisman talk candidacy for sure, whoever comes out as the winner and has a really big game in that season opener.
Yeah, 32 days from now. Wildly, that's not even necessarily the biggest game of the day, with Texas and Arch Manning taking on reigning champs Ohio State in the game right before that. So it's going to be a hell of a day for college football fans. Where are the Tigers the strongest, and where are your concerns about this LSU football team?
Well, I think strongest, you could say at the quarterback, you know, that the quarterback room is, they're very strong in, I think. You know, Nussmeier coming back as a 4,000-yard passer. And then if something did happen to him, they got a really good backup out of, and a guy that started a lot last year at Mississippi State, and Michael Van Buren. So you feel really strong about that quarterback room in case something did happen to Nussmeier. And, you know, my story that's going up on WWL.com, I think the biggest question mark to me, I think it's on both sides of the football, on the offense and the defensive lines, and how well they come together, especially on the offensive line, where they have to return or have to replace four starters, and your one starter that's coming back, you're not exactly sure if he's going to be playing at the same position that he was last year, and that being DJ Chester, who may move from center to guard because Braylon Moore, who was a starter at Virginia Tech, is now at LSU. Josh Thompson is the other big transfer portal addition, a fifth-year senior from Northwestern who can play both tackle and guard. And you have to replace Will Campbell and Emory Jones. And can Tyree Adams and Weston Davis be those two guys? And then when you look at the defensive line, it's you're wondering who could step up there. You know, you got a five-star prospect in Dominic McKinley. You need to see that kid make some strides this season. Injury slowed him down during his freshman year. Defensive line was, they were just trying to piece it together last year, but there were some guys that really got some really good experience last year, like Ahmad Bro. You're bringing back Jacoby and Guillory, who's been around forever, but suffered a season-ending injury a season ago. And then again, another position where you load it up with transfer portal players and Patrick Payton and Jamari Butler and Jack Clyburn. I mean, those guys, you need to hit on those guys for LSU, meaning those guys need to be really good additions coming out of the transfer portal for LSU to take the necessary step that it needs to do this season.
Very quickly, is this a playoff team or not? Your prediction?
I think it's a playoff team. I mean, to me, the schedule's tough, but there's enough talent there to get to the playoffs. And to me, it's playoff or bust, Dave. I mean, if they don't
prepare
with for Brian Kelly, with an experienced quarterback like Garrett Nussmeier, and the investment they've made in getting all these transfer portal players, if they can't get it done this season, I don't know. I don't know when they get it done. Especially because they got to start at the quarterback position all over again.
Well, you're done for now, but if folks want more, they can read Jeff's story right now on our website at WWL.com. LSU players report for preseason camp with college football playoffs on their mind. Go read it now. More from Jeff throughout this camp and the season here on WWL. We shift to Saints, see how things went in the first padded practice after the news. All right, we've been waiting for the Saints to put on the pads. We've been hearing from the players, from the analysts, that until the pads went on at training camp, we wouldn't really be able to tell what this team was made of. So now the pads went on yesterday. So Steve Geller joins us, WWL Sports Director. What's this team made of?
Well, Dave, the QB competition still at the forefront, obviously. Everybody talking about Spencer Rattler, Tyler Shough, Jake Haener. And for me, and I think a lot of folks that have been out there see a little bit of hesitancy and maybe unsureness from the rookie in Tyler Shough, maybe not to be too unexpected from a guy going into his first NFL camp. Things didn't change at all with that yesterday with the pads on. There's times you're in his head while he's going through his progressions, and it's just taking too long to get rid of the ball, and then sometimes he'll just pull it down and scramble when it's like, just make a decision and go with it. I feel like he's unsure of himself right now, afraid to make that mistake. Hopefully things loosen up a little bit more for him and he just lets it rip. We haven't really, I feel like, seen the same Tyler Shough from rookie minicamp, OTAs, and even mandatory minicamp. It's really wild how different of a guy he's looked so far in training camp, and that hasn't changed with the pads coming on yesterday. Spencer Rattler, Jake Kaner have looked definitely more decisive in what they want to do, getting the ball, getting it out quickly, making those reads, and just delivering. Another problem with Shuck is, too, some low balls. A lot of low footballs need to improve on the accuracy. Other than that, I'll say, you know, we talk about the pads coming on. Finally, we got to see that war in the trenches more between the offensive line and defensive line. And for me, the D-line, man, they seem to be putting on a lot of pressure on these QBs, getting in their face, making them move off their spots. And the fact that a lot of Spencer Rattler, Jake Kaner, Tyler Shuck, all having to scramble around. So the O-line's still a work in progress. I will say the transition of Trevor Penning to guard, that's one I'm definitely keeping an eye on. He seems at least comfortable in that spot, hoping that, you know, he finds his way here after not being so successful at the tackle position. And the new tackle, first round pick Kelvin Banks Jr., went through the reps yesterday and had really one good play. I forget who the edge defender was, but was coming in and basically pancaked the guy, put him on his butt. The run game for the Saints, I'll say, wasn't as successful yesterday, which is a good news for the defense, a unit that gave up the second most rushing yards per game a year ago. So while the rushing attack didn't look so spectacular yesterday, at least that could be good news for the Saints' run defense, which was just so abysmal yesterday.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny in training camp. If you see one side do well, it means the other side is doing poorly, and they're both your team. So yeah. It's that whole give and take. But yeah, the defense really had been at the disadvantage without the pads on. If you can't hit and you can't tackle, how much can you really show other than footwork and speed? And so I guess on one level, it's encouraging that you saw a good day from the defense once they actually got to hit the offense. At the same time, you wish the offense would have responded better, perhaps, than they did. Back to the QB conversation. Often in the NFL, we hear it takes time to adjust to the speed of the game, that the pro game is far more upbeat and a faster pace than the college game. And even the worst NFL team is made up of some of the best players from college, so is typically the worst NFL team is better than the best college team in terms of overall talent. Is that, you think, I mean, is what happening to Tyler Shuck, as it is taking him an adjustment period to get used to having so much talent on the defense and adjust to even his offensive weapons being even faster? You know, other than like Jaden Daniels, usually you do see that adjustment from a new quarterback coming from college to the pros.
Yeah, you mentioned Jaden. He was a freak, just, you know, coming in and being an instant success. Like you mentioned, that doesn't happen often. That could be a problem for Shuck for sure, because like I mentioned, when things weren't going full throttle during OTAs, minicamp, Shuck seemed okay. It wasn't like you felt like he was overthinking things and holding on to the football. We've come onto this situation now where he seems unsure of himself, and we've seen some inaccurate throws as well. There's been good moments as well, but sadly the rougher times have stood out more. And with Spencer Rattler, Jake Kaner, they've had that experience more, so you would expect their clock to be, I don't know, sped up to the NFL game a little bit better. Hopefully we get to see Shuck make that adjustments, but early on right now, yeah, it's a little frustrating even watching the practice, because you see him start to scramble around and it's like it's just a 7-on-7 drill. There's no pass rush even coming. It's please just get rid of the football, Shuck. Just make a decision and go with it. Let it rip.
Yeah, no one's going to tackle you, so why are you scrambling? All right. We feel the frustration. And, hey, I mean, Spencer Rattler started, what, 6 games? Haner started a game last year, so they absolutely have the NFL experience advantage.
Exactly.
And there's a long time between now and when the games that matter are played by the New Orleans Saints. So we'll see how quickly that learning curve is for Shuck. We're talking with WWL Sports Director Steve Geller. When we come back, we'll talk about what to expect today. Will the pads be back on for a second consecutive day? And how is this team dealing with the heat? We'll talk more about today's Saints training camp practice with Steve Geller after we check on WWL Traffic. Man, I am looking forward to some chicken wings. Later today, it's National Chicken Wing Day. Mm-mm-mm. Steve Geller is with us, our WWL sports director. What's your favorite flavor of chicken wings, Steve?
Man, I've been definitely on a lemon pepper kick of late. Make them extra crispy, too.
Can't go wrong with that. I love all the different flavors, but there's just something about going with the traditional buffalo that just hits the spot. And a lot of places giving away free chicken wings or buy one, get one deals today. Take advantage of that. So yesterday, the Saints were in pads for the first time. Are they back in pads today at training camp?
You know what, Dave? I'm kind of surprised. Today is an unpadded practice at the indoor facility, and they're just going to be doing a walkthrough and do some special teams work. So it's a very, very light day after getting the first day in pads. It seems that this staff is being very intentional with trying to conserve these players' stamina, their bodies going into the year, and I guess it should be expected considering all the injuries the Saints squad suffered a year ago. But I was definitely shocked to see that, okay, we had one day in pads and boom, they're already getting a quote-unquote break with just a walkthrough session going on later today.
Yeah, I don't know, because you heard Coach say over the weekend that once they put the pads on, there was going to be an adjustment process, that the players had to get used to being in pads again. And by that, I think he meant get used to getting tackled and hit and bumps and bruises again. And I think you're absolutely right. I think there is a very intentional plan from, if not the coaching staff, from the office staff to say, we are not going to let these guys get beat up and banged up and hurt in the preseason, in training camp, when there's such a long season ahead. You know, you look at the teams that have success the last few years in the NFL, it's the teams that still have their superstars halfway and three quarters of the way through the season.
Yeah, and Kellen Moore, the new head coach of the Saints, is coming from the Philadelphia Eagles squad that just won the Super Bowl in the Superdome. If he's taking a little bit maybe of what Philly did as they ramped up for the season, I'm all for it if that helps this team stay healthy for this year. And I said ramp up. That's like the big buzzword of training camp for me, just like during hurricane season we hear, you know, hunker down. For me, ramp up is the training camp buzzword.
All right. Well, hopefully they ramp up and up and up and finally get all the way up and ready to go. And like we said before, there's a long time before the regular season. Have you heard much in terms of bulletin board material for this Saints team? Every time a ranking comes out, every time a list comes out, every time grades are given out, the Saints are getting Fs. They're at the bottom of the rankings. They're either the worst or with the amongst the three or four worst teams in the NFL by somebody else's rankings. Is this something that this team is ignoring, or is this something that they're listening to and using as motivation?
They definitely hear it all. We've talked to plenty of the players about the articles coming out about the worst roster in the NFL. Possibly having, you know, the number one draft pick going into next season, even doing, you know, interviews with guys. We heard from Taliese Fuagu, who said, man, we got the disrespect right away thrown in our face with no primetime games given to us this year on the schedule. So they hear it. I know it's a little bit of a motivator for them. I don't think it's anything like you said, that bulletin board, they got it tacked up in the locker rooms right now. But they're aware that nobody, not a single soul out there, seems to be expecting anything good from this Saints squad this year. And, you know, as crazy as it is, the NFC South is still wide open. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have won a division the last 4 years, and you have the Atlanta Falcons and Carolina Panthers, who are no proven squads as well. Anything can happen. The biggest issue with this the Saints squad right now that I think has everybody with the, you know, have those big question marks around them, is because of the uncertainty as the QB position, the most important spot on the roster.
Yeah, no doubt. And hopefully once that is answered, maybe things look a little more certain and there's a more increased level of expectation. But hey, at least this way, maybe they can sneak up on some teams. And if people expect nothing from them and they can put something together, then maybe they can get a few wins in a row from teams that don't expect them. And then maybe that builds the confidence. And who knows? Yeah, there's nowhere to go from except up when you're all the way at the bottom, right?
I hope so, because 5-win season was rough last year. I can't deal. Some people are calling for a 2-3-win season. That would just be brutal, Dave.
Yeah, let's not do that. All right, Steve. Well, enjoy the unpadded walkthrough inside the facility today. At least you and the players don't have to be out in the heat. We'll be looking forward to hearing more from you on Sports Talk at 4 o'clock. He's Steve Geller. I'm Dave Cohen on WWL. What are your expectations for this Saints team? Let's talk about it after the news. 8:44. Thanks for joining us here on WWL First News. I'm Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. Jane Cooper joins us now, the chair of the French Quarter Management District. And Jane, you've got to be tired of talking trash, huh?
Well, it is interesting, and every day brings a new development. So I think we'll be talking for the rest of the week.
Yeah, and maybe beyond that. I'm confused, to be honest with you. I keep hearing different experts tell me different things about how this is all going to play out, and I'm wondering if there is even really an answer yet. I know that you got together yesterday with the French Quarter Management District and voted for IV Waste to continue to pick up the trash in the French Quarter, but we hear conflicting reports on whether or not that vote will actually lead to IV Waste picking up the trash in the French Quarter, because it's my understanding from explanations from legal experts that the state law says you only get to pick in the event the city does not have a contract in place with a vendor. And so far, the courts have upheld, although there are still cases pending on appeal, that the mayor's selection of Henry to pick up the trash, or at least to subcontract with somebody to pick up the trash in the French Quarter, supersedes any decision you make. So what is your understanding, and what are your lawyers telling you?
Well, our counsel on our board believes that there is not a legally enforceable contract in place, in part because there are still cases pending on appeal. And there's still some discussions going on today in the courts in terms of the Troy Henry contract.
So you don't feel like you've selected a backup or a contingency in the event that the city does not select a contract. You feel like your vote is the vote because of the confusion and the pending court action?
We believe our vote is a solid vote for IV Waste to be the emergency sanitation vendor effective August 1st.
So realistically, come August 1st, which is only a few days away now, what do you expect to see in the French Quarter? Because obviously the mayor has a different opinion. And Friday morning, do you think we're going to have two companies picking up trash in the French Quarter? Or is there going to be one? Is there going to be fights over each garbage can and who's going to empty it?
You know, my crystal ball only goes to the end of the day today. But, you know, this whole thing is absurd. You've got a vendor, IV Waste, that is supported by all the businesses, all the residents. Doesn't matter what political party you support. It doesn't matter, you know, whether you live in a big house or a small house. Everyone supports that vendor. And the mayor is recommending a vendor that's going to be $2.1 million more expensive for less services. So, you know, I think it's just very interesting and very unfortunate.
Do you have any idea why the mayor is so insistent on Henry Consulting, the more expensive, less services, as you described it, when your understanding is that everyone who lives and works in the French Quarter, who owns businesses and homes in the French Quarter, does not want that vendor?
I don't know what the mayor's motivation is. I think there's a lot of speculation about that, but I certainly don't know.
So how do you see this? I mean, I know you say your crystal ball goes through today, and I appreciate that, and we're making a lot of jokes about this, but it's when you get down to it, the reality of the situation is that these are people's lives, people's livelihoods. You can't have two vendors expecting to get paid. There's no way the city's going to pay two companies to do the same thing. So if they're both out there doing it, someone's going to go unpaid. in reaction, based on the city's recent history, they might both go unpaid for a long time. But and I don't. That's we laugh so we don't cry because that's not a joke.
Right. Right.
But do you have? I mean, I don't know you if know. The police are going to have to get involved. I really am kind of worried about how this plays out.
I mean, the courts ultimately will be the deciding factor.
By Friday?
So, possibly. And, you know, the other thing, Dave, is this weekend is Satchmo Fest in the French Quarter. All right? That is a great festival. The music of Louis Armstrong. We have tourists coming in. You know, we'll have, hopefully, invite all the listeners to come down to the French Quarter. And so it's not just an ordinary weekend in the French Quarter. It's a special weekend in the French Quarter. We need this to work.
And the question remains, will it work? I'm Dave Cone. We're talking with Jane Cooper, chair of the French Quarter Management District. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about which court cases are pending, where they're pending, and when we might get some clarity from the courts. I got to imagine, though, before this is over, this has got to go before the Louisiana Supreme Court, which happens to be in the French Quarter. So that's kind of fitting, I guess, and what the timetable for that might be. We'll continue the conversation coming up after this look at WWL traffic. High from 96 to 98 today with a heat index of 110 to 115. Dangerous heat again today. Please be careful. This weekend, Satchmo Summerfest in the heart of the French Quarter will be drawing jazz fans from around the globe and across the country, journalists from overseas and here at home, coming to New Orleans and to the French Quarter. Jane Cooper is the chair of the French Quarter Management District. Can you imagine the impact if there's piles of trash and stinkiness everywhere in the French Quarter, what that's going to do in terms of posts and reports and journalists filing their stories around the globe on what they experienced in the French Quarter in New Orleans?
It would be a worst-case scenario. I mean, New Orleans has one of the strongest brands in the world. I believe it's in many ways founded around our culture and our music, and this is an opportunity this weekend to showcase all of that, as you just mentioned, to visitors from all over the world. Why wouldn't we want the French Quarter to sparkle as it does today and every day with Ivy Waste doing the sanitation work that they do?
Your vote yesterday aims to ensure that happens, but I think that's unclear in terms of what analysts, experts, and different parties may believe. So when do you think, are there any hearings scheduled that you're aware of in any of the pending court cases at the appellate level or not that could bring some clarity to this before Friday?
It is my understanding that the Supreme Court is taking a look at the situation. I've been pretty busy as a volunteer. Our entire board are volunteers getting to the vote yesterday and moving on from that. So I don't have all the facts in front of me, but there is review going on this week, I understand.
Well, so we could see at least some temporary intervention from the state Supreme Court before Friday to at least, for the time being, lend some clarity to this, because, and it must help the fact that the justices have to come to work every day there in the French Quarter, and I think the last thing they want is their trash not to be picked up and then to be surrounded by garbage as they come and go from the Supreme Court. So that's got to work at least in the favor of getting some answers that can at least set this situation on pause and make clear who's going to be picking up the trash until they can fully hear the matters.
That would be very helpful. Yes, clarity would be a very helpful thing.
Jane Cooper, anything else you want to share with our listeners as they watch this saga continue to unfold? We laugh a lot because there is some comedic value to the fact that when you look at it, it seems to be from the theater of the absurd on many levels.
Agreed. So yes, it's serious. It's a serious matter, but we do have to look at the absurdity of it. And again, we've talked about Satchmo Fest. We'd invite people to come to the French Quarter, take a few selfies with a trash can or whatever, and really, honestly, enjoy this jewel that we have that we want to keep sparkling and keep bright and keep clean for everyone that values the French Quarter.
Jane Cooper, thank you for joining us, and best of luck as this moves forward. I hope it all works out and that the French Quarter remains as clean as it has been of late, and that that trash gets picked up and we don't see literal fights over who's going to collect the trash with one truck trying to outrace another. That would just be a whole mess. Thank you, Jane. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
I'm Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. Listen, this is a disaster. I know we have laughed about it here, and I know most of you are probably tired of hearing about it. But every day there's some other development that leaves us wondering, how does this end? And it seems endemic of what we've kind of experienced the last 8 years in the city of New Orleans, where there's not team building, there's not togetherness, there's not a common focus and a common purpose. It seems that everything is a fight. Everything is a controversy, and everything has us laughing so we don't cry. Coming up next hour, Walmart wants to use super agents to help you shop at Walmart. Also hearing reports that before it's all over, every one of us is going to have our own personal AI agent or super agent. What is an AI agent or super agent? And why does Walmart want us to have them? We'll find out after the news.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
A message from a former New Yorker, presented by Street Easy.
We left Brooklyn Heights in 2021 and we miss it. We went from sharing a neighborhood with a few celebrities to sharing a neighborhood with my wife's parents.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.